Get excited. It's the Bet the Board podcast Thursday edition. As we sit here and look at the board for those folks just tuning in for the first time, we'll cover everything and anything you need to know about this Sunday's NFL action, including a special preview of the Jets New England, which will come at the end of the podcast. The gentleman you're about to hear, he of Pain Insider and PainInsider.com. Pain, what's going on down there in Miami, my friend?
Not too much. Actually, some nice weather. No rain. So that's a positive.
Yeah, I have to imagine any day you don't get rain down there. Although, you know, you did have some rain in the forecast yesterday. From what my sources told me, a nicely detailed car didn't exactly handle those thunderstorms all that well.
No. Spent $125 to get the car detailed. Took it out one time, and it got dirty. It got rained on.
sounds like what's been going on with the Dolphins football team as well. But we'll get to them in a matter of minutes. I want to thank everybody in advance for all the questions you guys asked using the hashtag AskBetTheBoard. We will get to those as well. But Payne, as we start to look over the moves that we've seen since we last talked on Monday, let's start with the Giants and Cowboys. I know we're going a little bit out of chronological order. This number opened Dallas -5. You've seen the price balloon as high as 7, where there was expected resistance, now sitting at 6.5. What do you make of this particular game and what it means to both sides here?
I think it's going to continue to creep up a little bit. We have seen some resistance at 7, a couple books still sitting there, and it's been really tough to gauge these 4 p.m. timestamp games. We know a lot of sharp guys last week were on the Raiders, but again, the number didn't move. This is the one league, the one sport where the public has its say, and I think the public will continue to be all over Dallas here depending on how they fare in the 1 o'clock games. It's either going to be a double-up situation or, you know, a chase situation where I think you'll be able to still get a 7 on the Giants even right before kickoff. But my advice is to lock in the 7 if you can get it. I think this is kind of that perfect dynamic where we see Dallas look lights out on the road in a national primetime game. We see the Giants look the absolute opposite in the Sunday night contest. So it's a perfect storm. If this game was played the week prior, this number would have been Dallas -3.5. So we see what 1 week of perception does to this. Obviously, Cruz is out. He might be at the very, very most half a point to this team.
The question I have for you, and if you dig into this game, of course, the other big injury the Giants look like they're going to be faced with is no Rashard Jennings. And as we saw last week, the offense looked a lot different using Andre Williams, not nearly the same dynamic dual threat coming out of the backfield. What type of adjustment do you make in your handicapping knowing the drop-off between those two running backs?
Yeah, that's tough. And I'm usually not a guy that values the running back position a ton, but it looks like this is a decent drop-off. And that's kind of where I'm having issues with this. Andre Williams, to me, nice story at Boston College. For me, though, we're in the NFL now, the nice story. I don't really care about that. I don't think he's a very good running back. And so there is a significant drop-off. And that's what scares me, and that's why I haven't backed the Giants at this stage yet. If I can get a better price, meaning a better priced 7, I will still look towards the Giants, despite no Jennings.
That definitely makes sense. And we know about some of Dallas' struggles when you talk about how they've performed against the number in the role of favorite. 6-13 the last 19 times they've been installed as chalk. And as we discussed previously, they did struggle with the Texans in a very similar situation no more than a few weeks ago. I know we touched on Miami a little bit on Monday. Wanted to go back and revisit that game as there's been some news that have come out regarding the Dolphins in relation to no Sean Moreno being lost for the season with a torn knee. You've seen this number do a couple of interesting things. Open 3 with a little bit of juice, climb as high as 3.5 before there was resistance. How do you go about assessing the Dolphins at this point, knowing that they let a glorious opportunity slip through their fingers last week at home, now go on the road against the Bears team, which has struggled to cover numbers in their own building?
You know, it's tough. Initially, I like this spot for Miami. They've done well on the road as an underdog, and it's typically a spot you look to back them. They've been much better on the road versus home. When you kind of break down this matchup, though, I know Chicago, to me, is one of the more overvalued teams in the marketplace. Good win last week, but that potentially could have been their first legitimate win of the season. When you talk about this Miami team, though, when you look at the makeup of the defense, that's what's kind of keeping me off this. They have trouble defending the flats where we know Forte likes to go. They have trouble defending the tight end, where Bennett's just been an absolute beast this season. And when you break down the matchup of their cornerbacks, they're small in stature, and that scares me a little bit when you're facing this Chicago wide receiving unit. So that's kind of what's keeping me off. When you talk about Knowshon Moreno, he's the one guy on a finesse offense that gives them a little dog, and they're going to miss him. He is going to be really, really missed. And what we're seeing now as we move forward with this team, defenses are now putting 7 and 8 in the box and forcing Ryan Tannehill to beat them, and I'm not sure he's good enough to do that.
Yeah, and I think you talk about some of the intangible angles. When you look at handicapping this game, yes, as we talked about, we know the Bears have struggled. You talk about the mismatch they may have against the Miami corners. I probably need to see more from Ryan Tannehill myself, especially at 3, maybe 3.5. I can make a case for a small investment, just given the fact that Miami has historically been a better road team covering numbers than they have been at home. You use the word undervalued and overvalued, or we do all the time in gambling. You look at Cleveland and Jacksonville. This game opened, the Browns -4, has ballooned out as high as 6. It's still available in some locations right now. Throw into the equation the fact that Jacksonville has been absolutely miserable as a home underdog, 1-7-1 in that spot. But again, uncharted territory for Cleveland. They haven't been this heavy a road favorite since they reemerged on the scene as a franchise, I don't know what you want to call it, back in 95. How do you go about making heads or tails of this particular football game?
Well, I think for me it's looking one way and looking one way only, and that would be to the home dog here. There's a couple sixes that you can pick off, and I think that's where the money will come in on this side. Cleveland obviously has looked very good, but now you're without a center, which is one of the most valuable positions on an offense. So I think they'll miss their starting center. I think this is a game where you get jacked up for the first division revenge spot of the entire season against Pittsburgh. You come out looking like, you know, pocket aces there, and all of a sudden the value just, everyone's enamored with Cleveland right now. They're that story that everyone likes to back, similar to what we're seeing with the Kansas City Royals. And I think this is going to be the spot for Jacksonville. Last week, Jacksonville stayed within the number, and a lot of people look at that as a backdoor cover. They were more than in that game, two red zone turnovers. They dominated Tennessee. They should have won that game outright. So it looks like Gus Bradley's starting to get the troops believing a little bit. The young pieces on offense are starting to emerge. You got a nice rapport with Bortles and Allen Robinson each and every week, growing just a little bit. So I like Jacksonville here, especially if you can get a six.
Look at you with the poker reference over there talking about pocket aces. I mean, from what I was always taught, though, it was a great hand to win small pots with, but never big ones.
Get it all in. Get it all in. Two-hand
shot. Yeah, well, anyone going all in on Cleveland here as a 5.5, 6-point road favorite may need their head examined, of course. Those words could come back to haunt me when we do this on Monday, as Twitter will remind me if Jacksonville doesn't indeed turn out to be the side here. Looking at another game that I think is real interesting, just because of the number more so than anything else, and we've talked ad nauseum about Indianapolis and how the professionals feel differently than the general public. The Colts remain a 3-point favorite. Yes, you have to lay -$1.20 right now, and even seeing -0.25 starting to flow into the market against the Cincinnati Bengals. The big question here, which we think he'll miss, A.J. Green expected to miss, but I don't think that's necessarily being reflected in the number. What do we do with the Colts going forward, and how do you effectively quantify Andrew Luck and what we've seen from the defense in recent weeks?
That's been one of the toughest things to actually quantify, is Andrew Luck. And when we talk about this defense, not a lot of people had high hopes for them, but you already got 17 sacks this season. That was the big question mark with Mathis out. The defense has been very good the last few weeks, so it's very tough for me. Cincinnati is a team that's extremely tough for me to gauge, and if this was to get to 3.5, which I think it has the potential to do, it won't be a revelation to anybody with a pulse that A.J. Green is out this week, but it will probably pop up on all your betting screens, and I think this will tick to 3.5, and you'll see sharp money then come in on Cincinnati. But for me, I'm just not sure what Cincinnati is. This is a team that I was not high on at all coming into the season. I know they started fast, but when you look at who they played, Atlanta, Tennessee, nothing to really love there. For me, it's going to be this defense, which didn't perform again last week. They lose Zimmer in the offseason. He was the glue to this team. I don't like the coaching staff, and that's, I've made that well known, and they don't seem to be making the adjustments now that there's a couple weeks of film on them. So that's something to look at, and that's why I'm not running and backing Cincinnati in this spot right yet.
Now, I know it's always fascinating. I mean, you and I talk all the time about looking at betting splits, just trying to gauge where the market may go on some of the public tendencies. Were you at all surprised to see such a high percentage of tickets early in the week coming in on the home favorite here?
I'm absolutely shocked because Cincinnati, everyone loved after 3 weeks. I mean, people were crowning them champions. People were looking for Super Bowl futures. And now all of a sudden you get a game. I know it's early in the week and the public does most of their betting on game day, but right now 85% of the tickets are coming in on Indianapolis, and that's just blowing my mind.
Yeah, and if 85% is a high number on that game, the number we're seeing on this game is even higher. Seattle, a 7-point road favorite at St. Louis, and I ask you this. Of course, we had the Rams on Monday night, along with some of the other sharp guys out there. You can say what you will, right side, wrong side, one play, definitely changed the dynamic at the end of the half. But who in the hell on God's green earth wants to run and back St. Louis here on a short week against a Seattle team that's got to be filled with piss and vinegar coming off a loss against the Cowboys?
Yeah, typically, you know, that's kind of where we're looking, home dog getting, you know, a touchdown, but it's a team that I want nothing to do with. Film's coming out on Austin Davis. Teams are seeming to make adjustments that St. Louis just doesn't seem to be making right now. I'm really questioning Jeff Fisher. This is a guy that fizzled out late in his career at Tennessee. He seems like he's still playing football in the early 2000s, late 90s. He's failing to make some of those adjustments. And it's really, really showing itself. He's very stubborn. He's set in his ways. And I think it's really, really hurting the St. Louis Rams team. And for that, I just can't back them right now. And I know this has gotten to 7, and they're trying to draw some money on the dog here. I just don't know if I'm going to be able to bite.
Yeah, you talk about the way his style of football is reminiscent of the early 2000s. That mustache is a throwback to the late 70s. So credit to Jeff Fisher for still keeping that going at this day and age. And for I guess we'll call him a throwback quarterback, but a quick hit on the Sunday night game, surely to be one of the highest volume games of the entire day. I know there's some dissenting opinions out there in the market. Denver is 6.5, 7-point favorite, depending on where you look. Total in this game, open 47 at Pinnacle, out to 49.5, a market consensus. In Vegas, you can find 50.5 here. Imagine over money is going to continue to flow in. But what do you make of the Niners on a short week? We know the reports that apparently NFL coaches have said it's tougher to prepare for Colin Kaepernick than Peyton Manning at this point in their respective careers. But Denver, let's call him a 7-point favorite for argument's sake.
Yeah, it's 7. You know, it's obviously a little different handicap. At 6, 6.5, I can understand taking the favorite here. San Francisco, one thing that looked apparent to me was they started to bond a little bit in that comeback effort. You saw guys on the sideline finally getting along, Kaepernick acknowledging his coach. So those are some positive things that I took from that outcome. Now, I know it's short week, not a ton of travel here. San Francisco headed into the bye week. This would be a huge statement win heading into the bye. Right now, I think this is a very, very good number. I think they'll get balanced action come game day on this number. 49.5, the total, seems about right to me. I don't see a huge advantage right now, maybe uncover some information before game day, but right now I just don't have anything on this game that makes me lean side total.
Yeah, I think it's one of the harder games to handicap, and perfect book numbers on both accounts. And you mentioned acknowledging his head coach. Perfect time to acknowledge you as the co-host. He, that voice on the other end of the line of Payne Insider. You can see most of his great work at PayneInsider.com and listen to him on radio stations across the country throughout the week when he shares his nuggets of wisdom regarding NFL betting along with college football. I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. You can see my work, ToddsTake.com, and see some college stuff Friday nights on Fox Sports 1, Countdown to Kickoff, along with my column weekly on OutkickTheCoverage.com. And Payne, this is where we go to the social media-driven portion of the show, using the hashtag AskBetTheBoard, and we encourage people to use that hashtag whenever inspiration strikes, even if it's not on Thursday when we send out our friendly reminders, to ask us questions, preferably not game-specific, but more so about the industry. And let's start with one that comes from Alex Clemens, and he goes by the Twitter handle _PBRMeASAP. He says, when you're on one side and a trusted opinion is on the other, how do you tend to decipher the information?
It's a tough one, but you have to, number one, be confident in what you do, be confident in your numbers, be confident in your information, and stick with that. That said, you definitely don't like to be against strong, I would say trusted, respected opinions, and kind of what I've always seen when we've been against other groups, it's a coin flip, and neither of us have long-term advantage. It's likely not an advantage play laying -110 over the long haul. You just kind of hope that you can gain some bragging rights in that one spot. So you definitely don't like to see it, but I think you have to be confident in what you're doing.
And I will add a little bit to this, that the NFL is a different sport than almost anything. You do tend to see more agreement in this particular market than we will in college football, baseball, or even college basketball, just given that there are such huge perception biases built into all the numbers that I think factors in, and a lot of us who go about handicapping are typically looking for the same things.
Yeah, I would not disagree with that. I think there is more confirmations. There's more groups sharing opinions on certain games. In the NFL, it's definitely, in my opinion, and you nailed it, more cut and dry, so to speak.
And we talk about cut and dry. Last weekend, unfortunately, was not one of those weekends. I know you performed a lot better than the rest of us, but one of the worst weekends books had when the final numbers were in, highlighted by that Monday night debacle. And it leads me to a great question from Bobby Brooks, who goes by @BrooksBets on Twitter. He says, how are you currently defining Joes and pros? For those people unfamiliar with the reference, I typically put out a tweet on Sunday morning talking about where the pros are and some of the more public sides. And how has it changed over the last decade, if at all?
Well, I think it's changed a lot. And I think one thing that people get conflicting information, I would like to say, is sportsbooks constantly say, you know, the bettors are becoming sharper, the public bettors are becoming more informed. But then when they release their Vegas quarterly numbers, they seem to be doing better than ever before. And it's just kind of an overall interest in sportsbooks and sports betting growing. So the numbers are growing. But the market's evolved. There's a lot of the $500, $1,000 bettors going early in the week. And it's really tipping hands, and it's, you know, you're on Twitter now, you got 15,000 followers, you're giving out games to a broad variety of people betting. So I think the Joes, so to speak, are becoming more knowledgeable than ever before, and that's changed. And the market has evolved because of it, and it's forced sharp guys to go earlier in the week because of that also.
I think that Twitter phenomenon is a great point. You talk about folks that have, you know, 15 to 20,000 followers that are sharp guys, not betting huge limits, but obviously if you have an army following you into a number that you can distort the market, a lot different for the pros who try and wait till later in the week when limits are raised, not always wanting to tip their hands. And some groups, I'd imagine, at this point don't get as many positions as they typically would unless the number ends up settling or there is an overcorrection in the particular market. And one other question that came up from @TrillEmery, Twitter handle @TrillEmery, more about situational handicapping than anything else. How much stock do you actually put in the revenge factor when handicapping a game? Of course, last weekend we saw the Browns getting revenge from the Steelers, probably applicable to this week, you know, in terms of the effort they'll bring. But what's revenge worth to you in the NFL?
In the NFL, it's different. I value it a little more in college football. NFL, to me, division games are so important. And you'll see in the NFL that it's important to get that split, or it's important to sweep a team that you're supposed to sweep, because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what you do outside of the division. Now, I know a lot of people will say, what are you talking about? But win your division, you make the playoffs. So a lot of teams now base their drafting and the guys that they're picking up off the waiver wires to kind of combat what other teams are doing within the division. So revenge factor within the division makes some sense if it's the second leg and you're looking to get the split. Maybe you factor it in a little more than you would, but looking at revenge and giving it a certain number across the board, I don't believe is a good strategy in the NFL.
That's always interesting. I mean, everybody has different ways to approach it. And I would echo your same sentiments when you talk about the NFL versus college football. If anything, I think revenge gets overvalued only because certain teams, like you said, just can't match up with others. And yes, wanting to beat your opponent is one thing to get that monkey off your back. But if you don't have the right personnel, it does create problems. And for those folks who have waited across a lot of our rambling to get a preview of tonight's game, Payne, I think we should start and make you the resident meteorologist here. You know, we know you're no Jim Cantore over there, but what do we see in the forecast for the Jets and Patriots for games tonight at Foxborough? You've seen this total go from 47, hit a low of 44, come back a bit to 44.5, and the number has pretty much settled. We'll call it a consensus of 9.5 right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of the perfect storm, so to speak. It was actually as high as 47.5 in some places. Dipped down, you nailed it, at 44. We have seen some money come back up. Weather looks like it's in the forecast. Depending on how quickly this comes into the mix, We're hearing between 5 and 8:30 is supposed to be the big wave of this. And my opinion here is once this game, once the pregame shows start leaking onto TV and you're seeing an absolutely downpour, if you like the over, I would wait because you'll see some under money come in once the pregame shows are on and it's pouring everywhere. That being said, I mean, I can't go under the current number. I think for a lot of other factors, it was probably the right side if you could have got 45.5 or better. Short week, two familiar opponents. With weather, I don't think either team really opens it up that much. The Jets need to get the ground game going. They just need to get their offense going. When you talk about what they've done the last few weeks, 3.1 yards per play the last 2 weeks. That's just mind-boggling to me. You get a New England defense without Mayo, but even without him, they were stout against a great Bills rush offense, allowed less than 2 yards per carry. So I think both defenses bring it tonight.
Do we think this number gets back to 10 once the public really starts to get involved? Of course, the option that's always available, and I imagine some of the folks will utilize here, is a 7-point tease, taking 9.5 down below that key number, 3 to 2.5.
You know, it's tough for me on the side to give a real opinion and just kind of break things down. And what we're doing now, we're getting, you know, a lot of information and we're doing a lot of things with math. And when they don't jive with each other, I tend to leave it alone. So the math guys that are on my team came out with a number of New England minus 12.2 here. And then the information I have is the Jets were the right side at 10.5 even. And so I'm not going to go against conflicting information, but I think you'll see a lot of teasers. I don't think New England's a horrible teaser leg, as square as that sounds, but they are awfully banged up, and that's one thing I'm trying to avoid. New England's just very, very banged up.
Yeah, I mean, again, like we tell people all the time, I know it's not what they want to hear, but just because a game is played on national TV on a Thursday night doesn't mean you have to bet it. Plenty of other great wagering options that'll come to you on Sunday's NFL card, let alone the other sports that are out there. Payne, like we always like to do when we wrap our Thursday podcast, before we join folks again for Monday with our Monday Night Football preview of what I think is a fascinating game between the Steelers and Texans, along with some of what we've learned, any parting shots or words of wisdom for our loyal listenership?
You know, nothing too crazy. Again, I would just keep my eyes peeled on the Cleveland-Jacksonville game and the Giants-Dallas game. At this point, the early money in the market has dictated where these lines have gone, but I think the next move on game day will kind of determine the true position on where the sharp guys are on. So I would just keep your eyes peeled on those two games and see where the money's coming in, and I think that will be your true position come Sunday.
It should definitely be interesting, as you talk about on Sunday, especially with that Giants-Dallas game. Only three contests in the late time slot: San Diego, Kansas City, Arizona, Oakland, which we know where the public will be on, and then, of course, that Giants-Dallas game in the 1:25 time slot. For Payne Insider, he of Payne Insider on Twitter. You can follow him there or see his great work at PayneInsider.com. I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. Follow me on Twitter at the same name or read my work at ToddsTake.com. Best of luck to you in all of your NFL wagering decisions this weekend, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.